You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. We listened to the Hot Texas folks doing that song, Hot Texas. And we apologize for running a little bit late here. We had major technical problems.
We were just rounding up those little challenges, but we're here and you're here, and we thank you for hanging in while we got started. We have a very special show tonight. This is episode 196, and it is our fourth birthday. Let's bring on our guest.
Let's do it.
Yes, welcome to Henry Park.
Howdy, happy anniversary.
Hello, Henry.
Thank you, Henry.
And you've been with us from the beginning, and we're so happy to see you tonight.
I'm so happy to be back with you.
And we're going to bring on our very special guest. She's been waiting and waiting. Here is Vicki Femley. Hello, Vicki.
Hello, and yes, congratulations for this great milestone. I'm honored to be here for this.
Well, glad to have you.
It kind of crept up on us, Vicki, you know, when we were picking a date and all. Birthdays just kind of, they just kind of come and go, don't they?
We forgot to get the cake.
But that's okay. We're celebrating with two very special people with a very special night. Henry, we're going to just take a moment to go back in time with you and remember August 4th, 2022. Was episode number one.
Yeah. Hey, Courtney joined on too.
And we, of course, had Court on as well. And do you remember how and why we got started?
I'm not exactly sure how you mean. It was, of course, in many ways, a continuation of the writer's block.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Our dear friend, Jim Christina, author, and a gentleman who had a long dream of having a radio show, a podcast that would celebrate the written word and be a wonderful source of information for new writers, came up with the idea of the writer's block right here on LA Talk Radio, right here in Thursday night in this time slot. And oh my goodness, Henry, you were with us for the first Thursday every month. That show ran until June, late June of 2022. And we lost Jim and his wife, Jerry, who had been so important in the bookie, we called her, important in gathering the guests and getting us all ready for every show. And that show would not have operated without Jim's vision and his wonderful laugh and his gift of gab and Jerry's dedication. And so we can't honor this show without a nod to the what inspires us is the years of the writer's block. And remember, we used to be in the studio.
We used to be in the studio,
actually be able to, like, reach out and grab each other's hands if that seemed necessary. Now we're all in different states.
Exactly. We like to continue on the tradition that Jim set forth. And so welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, our continuation of the writer's block. So, Vicki, now you learned a little bit more about us and about the show.
Well, I'm really amazed. You know, your show has a wonderful reputation in so many writing groups. And every conference that I've gone to, people talk about Rendezvous with a Writer, and how important the show is to them. I've known several writers, authors who have appeared, and they just are full of compliments.
Well, my goodness.
That's great.
That's a wonderful gift you just gave us. Thank you so much.
We'll get swell heads.
Well, we have a lot to, we have so much exciting things to do tonight. So Henry yes. is with us the first Thursday of every month, and he presents his Henry's Western Roundup. And Henry, we're just going to turn the show right over to you.
All right.
Here he is with the latest news.
Well, thank you. I'm very happy to have two new Westerns to discuss, one of which will come out in October, and the other, which will be rolling camera in Spain at about that time. Angel and the Bad Man is coming to actual physical movie theaters on October 9th from Angel Studios, who got a lot of attention for their Independence Day release of Young Washington. This is, of course, a remake of the John Wayne classic of the same title about a Quaker girl who nurses a wounded outlaw back to health while villains and lawmen are searching for him. It starred Gail Russell as the Angel, Duke as the Bad Man, Burt Evans, and Bruce Cabot as the worst bad man, Laredo. It was written and directed by John Edward Grant, who also wrote The Alamo, The Comancheros, McClintock, and many others. It's a fine movie. The remake stars Zachary Levi in the Duke's role. I didn't recognize him at first with the beard, but you may remember him in the title role of the series, Chuck. He also starred twice as Shazam, which to my mind is the real Captain Marvel. And he was the romantic interest in the divorce, rather romantic interest to the divorced Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Australian actress Meg Fraser has the Gail Russell role. And as the worst bad man, it's the often terrifying Neil McDonough of the pale blue eyes and platinum blonde hair from Minority Report, Justified, Yellowstone, several of the DC comic series. I think I'm going to repost the interview I did with him a few years ago. Really interesting guy. Oh, and also in the cast is the great Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Jones.
Yeah. Now, I'm guessing he's playing the lawman that Harry Carey Sr. played in the Wayne film, but I don't know for sure. Now, Angel and the Bad Man had already been remade not that long ago, in 2009, with Lou Diamond Phillips as Quirt and Luke Perry as Laredo. Yeah. It's pretty good. And if you're wondering why this film keeps getting remade, it's because somebody at John Wayne Productions messed up. Didn't renew the copyright of the original, and the film went into public domain. And set to start shooting the last quarter of the year is I Passed This Way, based on the Eugene Manlove Rhodes novella, Paso por Aquí. I don't know that Rhodes is that well known today, but in the 1920s and 30s, he was a much revered Western writer. The writer-director is John Sayles, the twice Oscar-nominated writer-director of Lone Star. Starring in this year's Best Supporting Actress, let me say that again, starring is this year's Best Supporting Actress for Weapons, Amy Madigan, Oscar winner for Adaptation, Chris Cooper, two-time Emmy nominee for Beauty and the Beast, Ron Perlman, and from Silence of the Lambs and Monk, Ted Levine. It's about a young fellow who impulsively robs a bank and ends up with Pat Garrett, the man who killed Billy the Kid, on his tail. It's being shot in Spain's Canary Islands, which may sound like a weird location for a Western, but they have some great mountains and deserts, and were the filming location for the popular 1975 Western, Take a Hard Ride, starring Lee Van Cleef, Jim Brown, Fred Williamson, and Dana Andrews. Incidentally, Paso por Aquí was first filmed very well in 1948 as Four Faces West, starring husband and wife Joel McRae and Frances D. And their grandson, Wyatt McRae, tells me it was one of their personal favorites. The Lone Pine Film Festival is coming October 8th through the 11th, and there's nothing like watching a great Western than hopping in your car and driving to exactly where it was shot in the Alabama Hills. The theme this year is Mixing the Herd, all sorts of genres shot in Lone Pine and some Westerns from elsewhere. Mariel Hemingway, who co-starred with James Garner and Bruce Willis in Sunset, about Wyatt Earp and Tom Mix, will introduce that film. Kelly Lynch, who starred with Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse, will introduce that screening. And David Ladd, son of Alan Ladd, will introduce the film they co-starred in, The Proud Rebel. And please check out the current roundup featuring my interview with Blue Ridge star Jonathan Scheck. And don't miss the July-August True West with Willie Nelson on the cover and my article about The West.
We have that.
Yeah. You got it.
We
okay.
have it right here.
That must be quite an article, I know.
This is another issue chock full of great articles, and there's the one that Henry wrote.
Pictures.
Right. Talk about all the Westerns of Willie, Waylon Jennings, Johnny Cash, and Kris Kristofferson. And you can read all about this and so much more at Henry's Western Roundup.blogspot.com.
And we should. We were so fast introducing you, Henry. Henry is also the author of The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them.
I've heard great things about it.
And our recommendation is just pick up this book, find a film, get the film, and actually read this before you watch the film. Watch the film and then read again what he said. And you'll have a whole different idea about that film, even if you thought you knew it. So
thank you.
We're delighted to have you with us, Henry. I'm just going to, I think, Vicki, we're just going to go ahead and take our very first break. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking with Vicki all about her writing career. And we'll be talking in specifically about this book I could not put down. I had to read all the books that follow it, Autumn and the Silver Moon Stallion. So don't go away. We will be right back after this word about Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. You're invited to join the team. Up your author brand when you team up with Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, specializing in author branding, digital book tours, book reviews, and social media. Experienced, trusted, effective. Get noticed. Visit BlueCottageAgency.com and ClicksByMadison.com, proud sponsors of Rendezvous with a Writer.
Mares are different from the boys. They know it's their job to take care of their family. So many responsibilities. Oh, it's not easy to be a mare. Mares see things as they are, never moving far. The herd that leans on them for their sensitivities. Oh, it's not easy to be a mare. Mares keep you honest, make you strong. Says
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking with Henry C. Park and Vicki Felmley. And you've just been listening to Grammy nominated award singer Marianne Kennedy. She's singing a song, Mirrors, from her album, The Trail Less Traveled. And by the way, she's a big horse advocate,
yes,
too.
She is. And the whole time, Vicki, that I was reading this book, I was thinking about that song.
Well, that's a great one. And thank you for holding up Autumn. Here she is, too.
There you go.
I know, that's fun. We have Autumn in every visual here. Jim, do you want to tell us a little something about Vicki before we get started?
Well, we have a little bio here about Vicki. She's a former newspaper reporter and editor. Vicki Felmley has worked in the environmental field and has been active in historic preservation. Her articles have appeared in several magazines and have won numerous awards. Tonight, we'll be talking about her book, Autumn and the Silver Moon Stallion, which won a Willow Silver Award medal. She's also president of the prestigious writing organization, Women Writing in the West. Yes. Welcome, Vicki.
Thank you. I was 2025 president of Women Writing the West.
Okay. But okay.
I'm a board member, and so they still have me around.
Okay. We weren't sure, and we know that they have the annual conference coming up in October, and I could see that you're very involved. Yes.
Yes, that's in Phoenix. It's a live conference. Ann Hillerman will be our keynote speaker, and everybody knows her, I think. And so it's going to be a great conference. Our current president, Susie, is working really hard, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, I think, at this point. It'll be a great conference for our attendees. Yeah. You don't have to be a member to come, but check out the website, womenwritingthewest.org, and find out more about it.
Yes. And Vicki, where are you joining us from tonight?
I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado, and I've lived here all my life. I've done a lot of traveling. I've worked in various Superfund sites around the United States in the environmental field. So wherever you're from, I might have at least flown in to your airport.
Well, Henry, I know that you also have read this book, and in our next segment, we'll get into greater detail about characters and such. But Henry, did you find some things like some new words for Mustang and new words for Roundup and things? Did you find that eye-opening?
I found it very eye-opening. As you say, that there is a movement, which I'm sure Vicki will explain, to try and change the language of the way, I was going to say, Mustangs are discussed. And one of the things is to not call them Mustangs, but, oh gosh, what's it? Feral, which feral. I think of the cats, feral horses, and to refer to roundups as gatherings. Yeah. And what Vicki, what is the purpose, do you think, of changing the wording of things that we've had names for a couple of hundred years?
I think it was an attempt to sterilize the process of removing wild horses, Mustangs, from public lands to make it less romantic. I mean, when we think about roundups, when we think about Mustangs, when we think about herds and stallions and families and so forth, we have that cachet of course, the wild, wild west. And our western states, cowboys, so forth and so on. But I think that these words were, shall we say, I don't want to say invented, but certainly there was an attempt to transition away from the romance, away from the emotional impact that we think about when we think about wild horses and impacts, to a more sterile, business-like, corporate kind of cachet, as opposed to something that that we're used to seeing in movies and TV shows, for example.
Right. Certainly, I would say Mustang sounds like something nice to say about a horse. Feral is almost never a term that's complimentary. Oh, and that cat is feral too. You know, nobody says that.
That's exactly right.
It really is a negative spin. Yeah, either bland or negative to all of this.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I don't know that it seems like the last year or two, there's been quite a bit of pushback on that. And I'm at least amongst, some of the advocate groups and so forth. I think they've recognized that this was that attempt to sterilize it, to make it more of a business as opposed to part of our environment, part of our culture. And I think there's been some pushback on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to read this little definition of what a feral is. This is from a Google search with AI overtones. It says, because their ancestors were once tamed animals before living free, they're technically feral rather than truly wild. Well, you know, that might be true for the very first one out there, but there's a lot of horses out there who were born in the wild. So as far as I'm concerned, they're wild. They're not feral.
Now, if you're watching and you're wondering why we jump right into this about Mustang, it's because Vicky has written a very important book. It is a story. It is a story about characters and people and horses and animals and such. But there is a very strong attempt for the reader to understand and begin to understand what is going on in the Mustang BLM kind of world that most of us are not familiar with unless we are advocates and we are already involved. And so to me, Vicky, this is a very important book. And I know it was book three of a trilogy, but it becomes book one with more books following. And I had to read them all. I was so captured by the characters in the storyline. I just had to know where we were going. And Henry, I think the other day when we were talking, one of the interesting things she brings out in the story is about DNA sampling and also the study of even petroglyphs and things. Part of that, Vicky, is the characters in the book are trying to use this new information to prove they were here before the Spanish.
That's
right. That they're indigenous. They're not an invasive species that came with the Spanish, that they actually were already here. Henry, wasn't that mind-opening?
Absolutely, yes. It's what you've done, Vicky, I think, is you've taken the world of Anna Sewell and Black Beauty and brought it to the world of drones and podcasts, which is a major accomplishment to make it to grow out of there instead of feeling shoehorned into it.
Yeah.
That means so much to me. It really does. I mean, it almost makes my heart stop. So if I fall over in my chair, I've had a heart attack, but it really does. It just warms. I am so glad to hear you say that. I felt like I was trying to mold, like you were saying, the past and the present, and to make it all relevant and hopefully make some sense out of it. These books were not the easiest to write for obvious reasons. And Bobby, you've read all of them, so I think you can probably, see where some of the chapters were very difficult to write. But at the same time, doing the research and talking to so many people and seeing pictures and videos and talking to more people from Washington State to New Mexico, seeing what's going on with these horses. One of my great mentors is Alan Kania, and he wrote the definitive biography, the authorized biography of Wild Horse Annie, and very important person. And he's been so generous with his time in helping me understand not only the issues, but also how the horses live and what the horses do, because there is a lot of misconception about how the horses survive on these lands.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you do as the writer, you do lead us through some very difficult visualizations. I know I probably would not be able to watch a video of a gathering. You give it to us so beautifully written that I don't, you give it to me. I don't need to see it or hear it, because I have seen it and heard it through your pen. I don't know, Henry, I don't know if it affected you that same way.
It's very traumatic. What Vicky describes, I've got to say, I was completely unaware of what was going on. I have for years heard about these roundups of Mustangs on government land, and the way I've always seen it portrayed is, isn't this great? There isn't enough land, for them to graze, so they they round up a few of them, and then they, you know, find them new homes, and it's like a dog situation the way they describe it, and all very positive. But Vicky, I think you would say that that is kind of a misleading description of what really is going on.
It is. There was past tense, a very active prison program for prisoners in some states, some prisons, not all, but a few, to tame Mustangs so that they could be adopted more easily. That funding has all been cut. So that program went away either the first of the year or the end of last year, not too long ago. That's just one example, but there is a small percentage, very small percentage of horses that are adopted. And I can see why. I mean, I can understand why. Horses are expensive. And you do need to go through a screening process before you can even show up for an adoption. Well, to bid on a horse, I should say. And then there's a monitoring program. But again, horses are expensive, and I can understand that. But to say that many horses are adopted, a lot of horses are adopted, most horses are adopted, that is definitely not the case.
What percentage are, do you think?
I've heard anywhere from 3 to 6%. I think the 6% might be a little bit high, especially since some horses are returned. And I'm not sure that the data on that is as, the numbers are as accurate as they could be. So I'm not sure about that. In some areas, the adoption rate might be a little bit higher, but in some areas, not so much. Some of the horses are, you know, obviously the younger horses are in more demand than the older horses. You know, that's an obvious thing. But the other issues are the conditions of the horses when they arrive at the adoption arena. So right now, it's estimated there are approximately, and this is the figure that people just are staggered with, there are approximately 50,000 horses in captivity in private, secretive locations throughout the Western states, held by private contractors. There are approximately 50 to 60,000 horses still on the range. Mm-hmm. So almost an even amount. And at any given time, there are between 2 and 3,000 livestock heads on the same range. Excuse me, I'm sorry, 2 and 3 million. 2 million cows versus 50,000 horses.
Wow.
So that's, wow. That's staggering when you think about it. Wow. And of course it's seasonal, and it, depending on the state, you know, Northern Nevada, is prime now for grazing, not so much in January, February. So it is seasonal, but 50,000, about 50,000 horses are left. It's estimated, according to Alan and others that I've talked to, even just 20 years ago, there were over 1 million.
Yeah.
So there's the number.
Well, we're going to take another short break, and we're going to tell you a little bit about one of the places you can get Vicky's books and Henry's book and many of the books of our guests on Rendezvous with a Writer. You can find their books on the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, Ms. Vicky is going to tell us a lot more about this specific book, when and where it's taking place, and we'll talk about it a bit more in depth. Don't go away. Lots more to chat about when we come back.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
morning sun is on my back. The ponies stop to graze. That yellow horse is standing guard on a lazy summer day. Tangled knots in his long white mane, his ears catch every sound. He lifts his head to check the breeze, the mares, their heads to the ground. I know he hasn't seen me yet. The wind is in my face. But that stallion knows things aren't quite right, like something out of place. But it's all up to him to keep his little band of mares. So he stands alert while the others graze, like he's the only one that cares.
Welcome back. You've just been listening to Yellow Horse, written and performed by Doug Figgs. Doug shares that the song is inspired by a 1945 photograph of a Palomino wild horse stallion from the Red Desert of Wyoming. The horse's name was Desert Dust, and the photographer was Vern Wood. It's from Doug's album, Yellow Horse.
And welcome back with Henry and our special guest tonight, Vicky Family. So here we are. All right, Vicky, let's get talking about this specific book, Autumn, and the Silver Moon Stallion, who just sounds like Yellow Horse to me.
Well, Autumn was abandoned, and, it was a horse that was abandoned. I have written two other books about an abandoned cat and an abandoned dog. So it was logical to write about an abandoned horse. And that led to the other three novels as well, In the Dark Night, The Color of Fire, and the conclusion of the trilogy, Sun Sets In, which just was published about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about, I guess, maybe just when and where does the story take
place? Yeah.
It's contemporary. It's today, and it's set on a ranch, in western Wyoming, and that area, to the west of the Wind River Range. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're quite taken by the cover, and you had a question about the cover.
Well, I did, you know. Is this a particular horse? Who did the cover, you know?
It's a Palomino, which is what Autumn was. Is that your question?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The artist was, if you know.
Yeah.
Pardon me?
It was a particular artist that did this, the cover.
I did that particular cover. I love graphics design in my previous lives, plural. I've done quite a bit of graphic design, video production. Magazine production. And I love doing that sort of thing. However, for the next three covers, I felt like I needed a fresh approach, which never hurts, by the way. So I got with a wonderful photographer artist named Deb Little, and she did my next three covers. And you asked
me
to hold them up.
Yes.
This is The Color of Fire.
Yes. Oops. Yes.
And then, In the Dark Night.
Yes,
everybody's favorite, almost just about. But however, Sunset Inn came out, people really, really liked that.
Yes,
and so that's so they're very complimentary to each other. And she knew exactly what I wanted and needed just by talking with her a little bit. And it's like, well, this book's about this horse. This book's about this one. This book. She said, oh, and 5 minutes later, I had the covers.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim was also okay. Jim, I'm holding up the back.
Yeah, we have a sculpture here, a sculpture artist here.
Yes.
A good friend of mine who is a nationally known metal art sculptor now, Jeff Bates. I saw this. He had just finished it as I was getting ready to publish the book. I had a different back cover, but I saw that and I called him and I said, "Oh, Jeff, can I use that on my back cover of my book?" And he said, "Sure." Yeah. It is so indicative of, I just love that sculpture. I love it.
There's a little steampunk going on there too, I think, in that sculpture. I see gears and, you know, all kinds of steampunk things. I love it.
Well, I'm constantly looking for creative. I love creatives.
Yes. Let's see. Henry, do you have a question or comment about the book before we just, continue to dive into it?
Sure. I was struck by how the story is told from the horse's point of view. I immediately thought of Jack London and Call of the Wild, which, of course, is entirely told from the dog's point of view, and Anna Sewell's Black Beauty. And it had been a long time since I read Black Beauty, Vicky. So when I talked to you before about this, you reminded me that not only did she have, as opposed to London, whose dog essentially we see it through his eyes with Black Beauty. We not only see it through the horse's eyes, but in conversation with other horses and other animals. And I was wondering why you decided to tell the story that way.
Besides Black Beauty, some of my other favorite books are Watership Down and The Plague Dogs. Those books just captivated me, and how they really brought the reader into those animals' lives,
right,
from their perspectives. So I'm not as good as they are. I know that, but I've tried. I've really tried to follow them as very important guides to me personally. I believe very strongly that animals do have emotions. There's a wonderful Dr. Mark Bacoff at University of Colorado, who has written several books about emotions, animal emotions. He worked with Temple Grandin, the late Temple Grandin, and he was also an inspiration to me as well. And this is factual. What he has done is factually describe animals and emotions. And so I took all that, and I'm like, well, animals, I've had lots of pets. Everybody has. I know they talk to each other. I know they feel for each other. Mm-hmm. I've seen that. And so having the, for example, Autumn, her first conversation, it fell into place quite easily. And from then on, it just became a natural, well, of course she's going to be talking to Silver Moon. Of course she's going to be talking to Corky the dog, and everything like that. So it wasn't a very difficult stretch, shall we say. It was quite easy for me.
Yeah. Well, and I think as a reader, it really did help to that the animal characters were just as lively as the human characters, and that their relationship, the way Silver Moon took care of his mares, the relationships between the animals, if we're not horse people, if we've never had a dog, these are the ways that we learn what goes on in those relationships. And that Corky, and then later there's another dog, but it's in a later book. He's also really important. That's okay. Corky is just fun, and the
psychiatrist.
Yeah. Corky is just all-knowing, isn't he?
He's very full of himself. He's very full of himself.
Yeah, that would be true.
We mentioned a little bit earlier in the last segment, a little bit about DNA testing, and it becomes even more important in the future, the books that follow this one. But tell us a little bit about the character Dr. J.
Dr. J is a, should we say, a composite of several scientists, researchers that I've been following. She is Shoshone. But that identity is it has been augmented, shall we say, by the fact that she is one of the world's most famous and well-known geneticists, especially among horses, horse genetics. And like I said, she's a composite of several people I've been reading about, but a person that I knew very, very well, Dr. James Jefferson, who passed away last year. He was a Southern Ute tribal leader, and he introduced me to the histories of the Ute Nation, the Southern Ute Nation. And one thing that he said to me many years ago was, and this is almost a direct quote, "We, the Ute Nation, we had horses before 1492. Mm-hmm. And that is a very important part of their cultural history. Mm-hmm. And so taking that and molding that into Dr. J and Faith, is her Dr. J, Faith Juergens, again, was a natural evolution for me. I have been very, very interested in the genetic research that's being done, that's being conducted with the horses. It's been difficult for them because there is a very strong opposition to getting blood samples from captive horses in these situations where they're at. Blood samples have been very difficult to come by. So that's, and that makes me question, why aren't they allowing blood samples to be taken?
Yeah. Jim, is there another, I'm looking at time. Yeah. Is there another character?
Yeah, we have to get this
about?
Guy who's on the other side of the fence. We have to talk about Al Ebers.
Yeah.
What's this guy like?
Yeah, tell us about Al and his grandson, Philip.
The who now? I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry. Al Ebers and his grandson Philip.
Yeah, the rancher.
Just a little bit about them.
Well, that's Philip's grandfather, and they have had a tense relationship, shall we say, for some time. Al raised Philip. His parents were tragically killed in a car accident. And he really thought that Philip was going to be going to college to become a veterinarian for his ranch. How cool would that be? Unfortunately, yeah. Philip had different ideas. He wanted to be a paleontologist and archaeologist. He wanted to go that direction. And that caused even more of a rift between Philip and Al. And that sets up the next three books. Mm-hmm. Very importantly, that relationship. You know, family relationships are... they hang in there for a long, long time, and no matter what happens. And so we know that. And Philip has had some demons to deal with on that.
Yeah.
Especially with
Al. Let's say Al here. He's not so fond of the horses, right?
He's what? No.
He's not so fond of the horses.
He hates the wild horses. He hates the wild horses. And in fact, Bobby, you read Sunset's End, and that came out. That was a difficult chapter to write. I will tell you that. Mm-hmm. No spoiler alert, but that one was a difficult chapter to write. Even after all those years, it was still a chapter. But I needed to get that out. I needed to get that out for Joe, one of my characters. So, but no, he's definitely... He is one of them, and there are in real life, in other words, Henry, that people refer to wild horses as weeds. They're weeds to pull, weeds to remove.
I'm just looking at time, and we're going to play one other last song. And when we come back, we're going to find out what everybody's doing next and where you can purchase their books and find them and follow them. We'll be right back.
Watch the ponies run. Lord, they're running wild and free. Watch the ponies run. That's the way I long to be. My heart soars like an eagle when I see their flowing manes. Lord, I love to watch those ponies dance. Lord, I love to watch those ponies dance. Hear the bird song in the cottonwood as the maker crowns a morn. Kind of day that makes you thank the Lord that you were born. And the magi of the prairie wheel and canter in the sun. Life is born anew as we watch those ponies run. Watch the ponies run. Lord, they're running wild and free. Watch the ponies run. That's the way I long to be.
Welcome back to Riding with the Rider. We've just been listening to Pony Dance, written and performed by Alan Chapman from his album 98th Meridian.
Just want to go watch those ponies run. Don't you, Henry, want to go? Let's go. Let's Absolutely. Go watch ponies run somewhere.
You know, if I could just say real quickly.
Yes.
For people who may not be aware, this has been a problem for a long time. This movie, The Misfits, which... it was, of course, directed by John Huston, written by Arthur Miller, in 61, starred Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe, and Montgomery Clift, and was even then about the subject of the roundup and slaughter of Mustangs. Mm-hmm. It was on a much smaller scale, but it was a problem even then.
Mm-hmm. Great movie. What's the movie name again?
Misfits.
I'm trying to do it so the light doesn't.
Yes, yes. Well, Henry.
And Eli Wallach chases the horses in a small plane.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, they use helicopters now.
Right.
Yeah. So, Henry, where can people find you and follow you?
Okay. Well, you can find me mainly in, well, of course, in my book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them. And we know we can buy them from you. And yes, in True West. And of course, at Henry's Western Roundup. You can find easily. And I post a lot on Facebook, too. And that's about it.
And
right.
You'll be back with us again next month, the first Thursday in September. We look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
And Vicki, the same questions for you. Where can people get the book? What are you working? All of that fun stuff. What are you working on next? Let's ask that question.
Well, working with the book is with you, just like with Henry. I was just going to say that too. But also Amazon and bookshop.org as well. Goodreads. You can go to my website, vfauthor.com, and there are links to buy them as all the books as well. Right now, the e-books are available in a lot of different locations. So you just have to just search Autumn and the Silver Moon Stallion, and you'll find all of them. And you'll find all of the books by doing that as well. So they're available at your library. If they don't have it, request it. And your library, your local library, will get any of them for you.
Mm-hmm. And we know you have another book coming, so we'll need to talk about 2027 when we're ready to talk about 2027.
Yes, this one, I moved to Southern Colorado on the southern flank of Cochetopa Pass. So if you don't know how to spell it or don't know how to pronounce it, that book will teach you how to do both.
All right, Jim, you have a quote?
We have a quote. Take this from the book. And now this is a quote from the cantankerous cattle rancher, Al Ebers. He's meeting with BLM director Carl McKendrick and Mustang expert advocate Dr. J. He says, tourists don't feed Americans or put those T-bone steaks on the table. Horses take away feed from the cow. Simple as that. Your Mustangs are weeds and nothing more than that. Don't belong here.
Never did. Well, we thank you both for joining us tonight on this special evening celebrating 4 years and kicking off year five. Thank you both. And thank you to our LA Talk Radio's founder and our producer and tonight our DJ, Sam Hassan. Thank you to Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison for being so supportive of Rendezvous with a Writer. Next week, if you like Merlin, or you wonder if King Arthur was real, or you just are a fan of Camelot, then you need to join us. This is an amazing story. It is called The Merlin Deposition. It is written by two authors that will both be with us, Robert Prather and Cyrus Alderwood. And we look forward. This is a little thriller. It's great. Jim, do you have a final comment?
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing.
We'll keep reading.
And we'll see you down the trail.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Tonight.
Thanks, folks.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye. See you next week.